When you have someone who's missing in your life, there is no answer.
They meet in a brownstone in Brooklyn, New York.
I consider us all part of this Lonely Hearts Club, these sad souls.
But no one wants to be here.
They didn't pay attention to her. She didn't count.
Everyone here is related to a missing person.
But we know that she did not, could not, and would not disappear voluntarily.
And every story they tell is heartbreaking.
I still feel that maybe somebody's holding her, and that maybe one day they'll let her go or she'll escape.
But perhaps no story is more mysterious and frightening than this woman's.
I love Christine. I would choose to be with Christine over anybody.
Her name is Kathy Kupka, the organizer of the group. Her sister Christine disappeared.
And by now, Kathy has accepted the sad fact that her missing sister was probably murdered. What she won't accept, she says, is somebody getting away with that murder. And Kathy says she knows exactly who it is.
Like, this is so horrible that, you know, I know people try to understand, but it's so horrible that people can't understand. And I think the hardest part is that someone could take someone away from me that meant so much to me, and she didn't mean anything to him.
Marshall, who's your favorite auntie? Come here.
In 1998, Kathy's sister Christine was 28 years old.
You love your auntie.
A college honor student. She worked as a waitress.
She had such beautiful long red hair.
And dreamed of becoming a civil rights attorney.
And a lot of freckles on her nose. Well, she actually tried to scratch them off. She had a scar on her nose.
Somehow, she still found time to call Kathy every day.
She was such a caller. Christine was really a caller, always calling. I talked to her a million times.
When she was with my mom, she was little.
She called her mother, back home in Wisconsin, at least once a week.
She was always forthright, honest, and she trusted.
But in the weeks before her disappearance, the main topic of conversation was always the mysterious new man in Christine's life.
And he was flirting with her, and she was flirting back.
His name is Darshanand Prasad, known to everyone as Rudy. He was Christine's chemistry instructor at college.
Did this sound like a big deal?
Initially not a big deal, just that she had a crush on him.
According to Christine's family, she and Rudy didn't date while he was her teacher. But when the semester ended, the relationship began.
Oh, well, she thought he was so sweet and nice and, like, clean cut.
But when Christine brought him home to meet her roommates, not everybody was as taken with Rudy.
What was your first impression of Rudy?
My first? Don't like him.
Uslam Akadad was Christine's close friend and roommate.
He's good looking.
He's good looking. But his eyes. Have you seen his eyes? His eyes are really cold.
But if that's true, clearly Christine Kupka didn't see it.
Marshall, come here.
And in the summer of that year, Christine told friends and family what she thought was good news.
And then that's Christine with one of her friend's babies.
She was pregnant with Rudy Prasad's baby.
Did she want that baby?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she did.
But apparently, Rudy did not.
And was he at all interested in being involved with either her or her child?
Not at all. Not at all.
In part, Uslam says, the reason was cultural. Rudy Prasad's family are Guyanese immigrants, his father, a Hindu priest. Rudy reportedly told Christine he'd be disowned, kicked out of the family's home, if anyone found out about the pregnancy.
He just went crazy and said, no, it's going to ruin my family. I want nothing more to do with you.
But there was something more, something that took Christine entirely by surprise.
I still can't believe that he was such a good liar.
Rudy Prasad, that's him right there, was married.
She was so shocked when he told her that he was married. It was shocking. I mean, we were all shocked.
Did he ask her to get an abortion?
Yeah.
And what was her reaction to that?
She said no.
It didn't make any difference how much he ranted and raved, she was going to have this baby with or without him.
There was one thing Christine did want from Rudy.
She was very clear that she was going to put Rudy's name on the birth certificate and that he might be responsible at some point when she went to law school for helping with money.
And that, Christine told friends Nick and Susie, made Rudy Prasad absolutely furious.
She told me, I talked to her 4 days before she disappeared, and she said, if anything happens to me, it was Rudy who did it. Just go to the police because Rudy did it to me.
Why did she bring that up? Was she afraid of Rudy?
She was afraid. She was afraid.
But Christine's friends acknowledged that Rudy never specifically threatened her, and that some part of Christine was still in love with him.
It was a rotten situation she was in, a definitely rotten situation.
So despite whatever fears she may have had, on October 24th, 1998, Christine Kupka agreed to meet Rudy Prasad one more time. She told friends Rudy needed her help cleaning his new apartment. She told him to pick her up here, at her house in Brooklyn.
I said, do you want to do that? And she goes, look, if he kills me, he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail.
Rudy arrived at Christine's house about noon.
And I looked at him, he was pale. I mean, he was just pale. It's like, Rudy, are you okay? He's like, yeah, I'm okay, I'm okay.
Rudy and Christine, then 5 months pregnant, left the house together.
How could I have let her go? Or why did I do that?
Christine simply disappeared.
I said, he killed her.
You automatically said he killed her. You didn't think she spent the night with him. She went off somewhere.
Mm-mm. Never even went through my head.
Why were you so sure? That's...
I don't know. I don't know. I just knew it.
24 hours later, Christine's sister, Kathy, went to the police.
I was in such in shock that I didn't know what I was. You know, I was just desperate.
She told them about Rudy, said he had the motive and opportunity to murder Christine.
I mean, hello, is anything getting through?
But with no physical evidence linking Rudy to Christine's disappearance, no body, no eyewitnesses, no proof a crime had even been committed, the police could do nothing.
I said, well, what am I supposed to do? They said, I don't know, go find the guy. Ask him what happened.
Rudy, that's how we found Rudy. There's his name.
As it turns out, finding Rudy was the easy part.
You have a suspected murderer that lives on your block. I think you should know.
Now, Christine's friends and family are taking their accusations right to his doorstep. Next.
You can't get away with murder. You can't get away with murder.
After Christine Kupka's disappearance,
Where is
her friends and family are asking the same nagging question.
We want the truth now.
This time, outside the house of the man they think has the answer.
Rudy, Rudy, you can't hide. We charge you with homicide.
Rudy Prasad, now a dental student, Rudy lives here with his parents, his wife, and their two children. The protesters know Rudy Prasad was the last person seen with Christine. They say he was the father of her unborn child.
You can't get away with murder.
And they insist that gave him a motive for murder.
What about a stranger kidnapping? What about a stranger killing her?
I don't know, the day that she went with Rudy finally? I don't know, too coincidental for me.
Christine's sister, Kathy, says she became instantly convinced of Prasad's guilt.
What if you're wrong?
No, I'm not wrong. There's no what if I'm wrong. I'm not wrong.
Because she says he has behaved like anything but an innocent man.
Did Rudy ever call?
No.
And ask about your sister?
Mm-mm.
Wonder what happened to her?
Mm-mm.
Show some concern?
Mm-mm. Never. No, he got a lawyer. That was his concern. His concern was with himself.
After Christine's disappearance,
and imagine trying to keep the cat in.
Rudy Prasad refused to talk to Kathy, and for 10 days wouldn't even talk to police.
When Prasad finally did agree to answer police questions, with his lawyer present, he reportedly told them that he had driven Christine here to this mall, that he had stayed in his car while she shopped, and that he had later dropped her off near her house. Police have not been able to corroborate his statement, but without hard evidence, they can't disprove it either.
Here.
Christine has no rights, and if I weren't here, do you think anything would be going on? No. Rudy would just be fine.
Yeah, where are we? Irving and Hart Corner.
So she's hired her own private investigator, Gil Alba.
This is the toughest time of the case right now. This is the hardest part of the case.
He's right there. He's the third car. One, two, three, four. He's the fourth car up.
A former New York City police detective.
I come into the situation, and they tell me that Rudy did it. Am I to believe them that Rudy did it? Of course not.
Gil did his own inquiry.
After I do this, I could figure it out.
And now, he too believes Christine's friends and family are right.
He got rid of the girl, he got rid of the baby, he got rid of what he wanted to. So he's totally satisfied.
Let's go out and look out there, okay?
Okay, let's go.
See the lights on in the back?
Yeah.
Now,
he's looking for maybe blood on the walls.
He's looking for hard evidence.
We're gonna search up here in the back over here in the woods.
And Kathy has put her life on hold to help him.
This is an isolated spot. Nobody's been up here in a long time.
Yeah.
Together, they've crisscrossed New York City.
There's an industrial district, and it's all real canals and stuff, and then Rudy doesn't live so far from there.
Talking to Rudy's friends and family.
My name's Kathy. I've been here before.
They don't want to believe Rudy did it, and at the beginning, they were adamant about Rudy not doing it, and now, I gotta tell you, they're not so adamant anymore.
We searched in here, but where was it? I thought it was down here, all the way down.
No, yeah, we were just on Elm.
You think it would have been on that side?
But so far...
Oh, man, it looks closed, isn't it?
Uh-oh.
There's nothing definitive.
Are they coming back today?
Viene otra vez hoy. Because of hard work, you get the luck comes in where you get that one call.
Nick, do you remember how to get there?
Until that call comes, Christine's friend Nick, along with Kathy's husband Kevin...
Yes, good afternoon. I need to get directions how to get to your school from New York.
Are pursuing a different strategy.
I want people in his class to know that he's a murderer.
Making their accusations in a very public way.
Like that?
They're hanging up posters, complete with Rudy's picture, all over the campus where he's enrolled in dental school.
Guy in the picture? This student right here, and we believe he murdered my sister-in-law, this woman right here in this picture.
They admit it's less about uncovering information.
This is something small, but this does disrupt his life a little bit.
And more about pressuring Rudy.
We're out here in the cold putting up flyers, and he's there in a nice warm classroom taking notes.
So.
This guy's a second year dental student here.
When they finish handing out flyers at his school.
This is his home.
Nick and Kevin decide to hit a little closer to home. Literally.
But we put the flyers up and his relatives take them down.
And hang their posters right in front of Rudy's house.
You have a suspected murderer that lives on your block. I think you should know.
But by the time they work their way down the block...
The guy that passed by is taking him down, see?
Someone has already torn down most of their flyers.
We got tape. Let's put them back up.
Last time we were there, he called the detective that's on the case and complained that we're bothering him. Let him sue us.
It's worth noting that despite all those posters...
Hi, we're trying to get some information about this guy. We think he murdered my sister-in-law.
Despite Kathy and Gil's late-night visits to his friends and family...
Mr. Kumar? I mean, that's his last name, like,
Despite the regular protests outside his home...
Yeah, I know he's in there. His car's there, and the door's open, and the window's open upstairs. Yeah, I'm just sure they're home.
Rudy hasn't sued anybody for slander.
So I guess they're not going anywhere today.
Mm-mm.
And according to Kathy Kuka, it's not because he's a nice guy.
If he sues us, he's going to have to talk. And he doesn't want to talk, so he's not going to sue us.
In fact, since his initial statement more than 2 years ago, Rudy Prasad won't say anything about Christine's disappearance. Not to the police.
So now we're just going to hang out all day.
And definitely not to Kathy.
Oh, my God, they called the freaking cops.
But what will he say to us? 48 hours.
Rudy, can I ask you a question?
That's next.
Chris,
Christine always dressed in overalls. She didn't have any use for dresses. I made her a beautiful bonnet and made her put on a dress. She was so unhappy.
Since her daughter Christine disappeared,
look at that hair. Just, she had the most beautiful golden auburn hair.
All Elaine Bodell has left.
Her one favorite day of the year was Halloween.
Are photographs and questions.
I don't especially want to know how he killed her, but there is a body. I mean, where is her body?
But the man she believes can answer her questions, Rudy Prasad, isn't talking. 48 Hours requested an interview with Rudy repeatedly. When he didn't respond,
Rudy, can I ask you a question?
We went to his house.
If you didn't have anything to do with her disappearance, why won't you talk about it? Did you kill her? Rudy, did you kill Christine Kupka? Why won't you talk about it? Why not talk about it, sir?
Stay out of my yard. I'm asking one last time.
Rudy isn't answering anyone's questions, the police included.
I had no idea you could just say, I don't want to talk to you, and close the door. So, but you can.
Christine's sister, Kathy, is irate. The police can't do more.
My sister's gone, and her baby, and you're telling me that you can't go talk to Rudy? Wait, that does not make sense.
But since Christine's disappearance, police have said only that Rudy Prasad may be responsible. But as they told Kathy,
it's not illegal to be the last person seen with somebody. It's not illegal to have an affair with somebody.
All police will say now is that their investigation continues.
Hi, I'm trying to find out if you guys scheduled the public hearing for missing persons yet.
So Kathy is taking her case to the New York City Council, testifying at their hearings about missing persons.
And these guys that are going to testify today are like the higher up, so they don't hear it directly from the people.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Speaking first, Inspector Joe Resnick, head of the NYPD's Special Investigations Division.
I'd like to start out by giving you the definition of a missing person according to the police department's guidelines.
He knows Christine's case. Today, Kathy hopes to persuade him to go after Rudy.
98% of the cases have been cleared.
But by the time it's Kathy's turn to speak,
my name's Kathy Kupka.
The inspector has left.
I just want to start. I have like a little thing here that I'm going to read from, but I want to start by saying that Inspector Resnick left, and I think that kind of shows you what kind of priority this is.
Kathy gives her statement anyway.
Christine met Rudy at Baruch. He was her professor. His name's Rudy Prasad.
A story she's told hundreds of times before.
Christine then became afraid of Rudy because he seemed so desperate for her to end the pregnancy.
But it never gets any easier.
Oh my, I'm sorry. I knew I would do this. I'll be okay in a minute. So thank you for caring. And you never know who's going to be in this situation, because I certainly never thought that I would be.
Since we first aired this story last January, New York's Cold Case Squad has taken over what they call this high-level missing persons investigation. For now, her sister can only go on investigating. Her mother go on wondering, as Rudy Prasad goes on with his life, refusing to talk about Christine Kupka's disappearance.
The people here in Grafton County, New Hampshire, are surrounded by beauty. But they're haunted by the possibility one of their own has gotten away with murder.
I want the truth to come out. I always promised Stephen that I would never forget him. If he was gonna break my heart, it should have been by the way kids break each other's hearts. It shouldn't have been by the fact that I woke up one day and he's dead.
Kelly Sutherland still cannot accept the fact her high school sweetheart, Stephen Dow, is dead.
We were seniors in high school. We had our entire lives in front of us. We were starting to put those lives together. He was the first guy that I brought home that my father instantly liked and trusted.
He was a typical teenage boy with a passion for cars and sports.
He worked after school 3 days a week. He had more energy than three people put together.
If you believe the official report, Stephen was driving with his mother, Janet, when their car rolled into a ditch and caught fire on this New Hampshire road. They were both incinerated.
What was that moment like for you?
Wally Medeiros was Stephen's father and Janet's ex-husband.
I'm not sure I can describe it. I almost blacked out, quite frankly.
Although they had divorced, Wally still has fond memories of his marriage to Janet.
Janet was a very pretty girl and not a flamboyant person at all. She was very shy.
Janet always had a special bond with her only child, Stephen.
She was a very good mother. She loved Stephen.
And so did his father.
He liked the things I liked. He liked sports. He liked camping and mountain climbing, even after Janet and I were divorced and she was remarried.
About a year after Wally and Janet were divorced, Janet remarried a state trooper named Dick Dow, who adopted Stephen. Dow was a respected police officer. Janet was a mail carrier who was friendly with everyone. They all seemed happy. Then, in the dark morning hours of December 10th, 1982, one of Dow's neighbors saw a fire on the side of the road.
As I approached the flames, I could actually see that I had a car in the ditch.
John Sperling, a retired fire chief at the time, was the first to find the Dow's car.
I could see that I had a victim in the driver's seat, and also that this victim was beyond anything I could do for them.
Janet, aged 40, and 18-year-old Stephen were burned beyond recognition, just 500 feet from their own home.
Could you see the Dow house from the accident scene?
Yes, as I was standing in the ditch, I remember looking up, and I could clearly see lights on. And I can even remember feeling a little desperate sense of, gee, Dick, come on down and help me. I mean, he is a police officer. Assuming he must have heard that explosion, he should have been able to see the flames. They were very close by. It was almost a desperate feeling. Please, come help.
But Dow never came. The state police knocked on his door to break the news to their friend and colleague.
I felt very badly for Dick, having lost his wife and his stepson.
John Thal, police chief in nearby Dalton, went to the police academy with Dow and was a state trooper at the time.
I believe everybody felt that this was one of those tragic, unfortunate incidents that happened, and it just God knows why.
The investigation was brief. There were no autopsies, no interviews, and the car was destroyed within days.
I think it was done in a manner that was aimed at being compassionate towards Dick because he lost his family.
The police concluded it was an accident because of what Dick Dow told them, that Janet might have been distracted because she had been arguing with Stephen as they drove off that morning.
When you first heard about this accident, did you have any suspicion whatsoever that foul play may have been involved?
Not at all. Absolutely not. I talked to Dick, asked him what happened. He told me what happened, and I accepted it.
I was looking at this as an accident that we would never have answers to.
The crash never made sense to Kelly Sutherland, especially when she observed Dick Dow's behavior.
He started dating almost immediately after this happened, and I was put out by that.
Was Dick Dow emotionally devastated by what had happened?
If he was, he didn't show it.
Dick Dow moved away, and no one heard much about him until someone came forward 11 years after the accident with a far more sinister story of what really happened that morning.
Everybody who has listened to this story has no doubt that these two were murdered, and they were murdered by Richard Dow.
This woman's accusation next.
I was completely horrified.
When Janet and Stephen Dow died in a car fire near their New Hampshire home 19 years ago, it was declared an accident. The case was quickly closed. But was it really an accident? Or was it something else? This woman, Karen Safian, claims to know.
These two were murdered.
Who do you believe is getting away with murder?
Dick Dow is getting away with murder.
Dick Dow, Karen Safian's boyfriend of 8 years. At the time, he was the police chief of Whitefield, New Hampshire.
I thought he was a good man. I thought he was a strong man. I thought he was a pillar of the community.
When she first met Dick Dow, 2 years after the fire, she felt sorry for him.
I just felt he was probably a very lonely, very sorrowful person who could probably use a friend.
It was 1984, and Safian was a single mom, just out of college.
He revealed to me that Janet and Stephen, his wife and son, had died in a tragic accident.
Safian says Dick Dow never talked about the accident until one night, 5 years into their relationship.
Just out of the blue, he just looked at me and said, "How do you think Jan and Stephen really died, Karen?" My response was, "Dick, they died in a car accident. Don't you remember? Well, why did it happen so close to the house then, Karen? Think. Why did it happen so close to the house? Think. You're not thinking. Think. You're not thinking. Think."
Karen says Dick Dow then told her what really happened back in December 1982, a story he never told police investigators. Dow said he had gone to the basement of his house to put coal in the furnace.
While he was down there, he heard a pop sound, and he knew it was a gunshot, and grabbed an axe. Went up the stairs and went into the bedroom.
Did he say what he saw?
He said he saw a figure standing over Janet, and he attacked the figure with the axe. It was Stephen.
According to Safian, Dow said Stephen had used one of his police revolvers to kill Janet. Dow told her he then had to kill Stephen. As he told his story, Safian says Dow became enraged and reached for a picture of Stephen.
And he picks up the picture of Stephen and he just starts shaking it and saying, "Because this kid shot his mother," and he takes the picture and he just threw it. I was shocked.
Dick Dow had more shocking details, according to Safian, admitting that the accident was no accident.
What did he tell you?
I put them both in the car. I rolled the car down the hill. I went back to the house and I waited for the police to come.
But Safian says the confession abruptly ended there.
All of a sudden, he just comes out with, "Karen, if you ever tell anyone what I just told you, then I will." And he stops talking. "Dick, what will you do? I really want him to answer this." He shrugs and he turns away and says, "I'll just deny it."
She kept his secret for 4 years.
Why did you stay with this man who had told you this horrific story, a man who you knew now had lied to police?
Because if it had been as he had told me, then he was not a killer. He was no danger to us.
She convinced herself it was self-defense.
I really wanted that to be the truth.
Safian started to have doubts when she began to see what she describes as self-destructive behavior.
He would punch himself. He would hit himself.
Would he hit himself
hard? He would hit himself hard. It was boom, boom, boom. If you were watching it, you would cringe just at every blow.
Fearing for her own safety, she broke up with Dow and went to the police with her story in 1993. 11 years after the crash, the state reopened the case. The state hired Thomas Bohan, an accident specialist, to take a second look at what happened that morning.
They asked me to look at the file, look at the records, look at what evidence there was.
The original police report said that Janet Dow's car veered off this road and ended up right here in this ditch. The impact sent concrete blocks, which had been placed in the back of the vehicle for better traction, flying forward, knocking out both mother and son. According to Dick Dow, Stephen had placed a carburetor in a bucket of gasoline in the back seat. Police believed the gasoline ignited, causing the fatal fire.
The engine's been running for about 12 minutes now. We're just about ready to do this parking test.
To recreate the accident and fire, Bohan and his team found a 1982 Saab, just like the Dow's, and rolled it into this ditch.
We had a similar bucket of gasoline in the back.
We sparked it about 25 times?
Nothing happened.
There was no ignition.
The gasoline did not ignite.
There is nothing inside that car that could have set the gasoline off.
There he goes with the flare.
We only got it to ignite when a rag was thrust inside the vehicle and the window was left open for air to feed the fire.
Is it your belief then that the gasoline was ignited by a person?
It was ignited from the outside.
You're convinced of that?
Yes.
The speed in which this car landed in this ditch, what would you estimate that speed to be?
A couple of miles an hour.
I walk at a couple of miles an hour. That kind of speed?
That's right.
And the odds of a low-speed accident like this knocking the Dows unconscious?
Well, it's hard to put a numerical figure on it, but I think you've said never, you wouldn't be wrong in your lifetime.
When you look at this, based on your experience, do you say this was no accident?
That's right. I do say that. I did say that.
You say it was what, then?
Murder.
The results of Bohan's tests devastated Kelly Sutherland, Stephen Dow's girlfriend.
I really had finally put this issue behind me, and I pick up the phone one day, and it's like being slammed right into a rock.
Stephen's father and Janet's former husband, Wally Medeiros, vowed to get justice.
Justice for me would be Dick Dow behind bars for the rest of his life.
But 11 years after the fact, does the state have enough evidence to prosecute Dick Dow?
What was overlooked in that initial investigation?
Everything.
That's next.
Dearest Kel, since the first day I saw you in the lecture hall, it was as if I were meant to meet you.
Though Stephen Dow died 19 years ago, his memory lives on. Through love letters to his high school sweetheart, Kelly Sutherland.
You're the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I hope that the feeling will never end. And then he signs it, Love, Steve.
That was a year before he and Janet died. I miss the fact that I never got a chance to see him grow up, really grow up.
Wally Medeiros is haunted by the deaths of his son and former wife, Janet.
The last 18 years, have you had any real peace?
Absolutely not.
How often do you think of Stephen?
Every day.
Every day?
Every day. In my prayers.
Their grief runs deep and is compounded by their frustration.
It's not too late to correct a wrong.
Frustration that no one has been charged with what appears today to be murder.
The only way that Steve and Jan are ever going to be able to be put to rest is if the truth comes out.
Do you believe that Janet and Stephen Dow may have been murdered?
Yes, I believe that they may have been murdered.
Despite the results of the second investigation, New Hampshire Attorney General Philip McLaughlin doesn't think he has enough hard evidence to indict Dow for murder.
We just don't have the proof.
The reason? The original police investigation was bungled.
What was overlooked in that initial investigation?
Everything. There was essentially no meaningful investigation done. People thought of this as an accident, so they didn't investigate it as a crime. In this particular case, we have a car torn away, destroyed, the body's cremated, no autopsy's done.
Your critics would say you have a strong circumstantial case. What about that?
Well, my critics are in a different position than I am. My critics have the right to believe something. I have the obligation to prove something.
When the state refused to prosecute, Janet and Stephen Dow's friends and family decided to take matters into their own hands. They sued Dick Dow, claiming he killed his ex-wife and stepson, and then profited from their deaths by collecting on Janet's federal pension. But the lawsuit was dismissed, so Wally and Kelly turned to the state legislature for one last appeal.
I actually went up to New Hampshire and testified in front of legislative hearings.
That legislative committee asked the attorney general to bring the case to a grand jury.
There's enough evidence to go to a grand jury.
But Attorney General McLaughlin refused, citing again a lack of evidence.
For now, in this case, is someone getting away with murder?
If you pay careful attention to remarks sometimes imputed to Mr. Dow, someone might be getting away with self-defense, which of course is not a crime.
Remember, Karen Safian said Dick Dow claimed he had to kill Stephen because Stephen had killed his mother, Janet.
even though no one who knew Stephen could imagine why.
I really wanted that to be the truth, that he had killed in self-defense.
Who engages in an act of self-defense and then burns the bodies?
Well, that's an excellent question.
Dick Dow is living in Maine. He refused to talk about the case.
I said to him, if I were you and I were innocent, I'd be down pounding my fist in the Attorney General's office demanding either a public apology or a trial. And his response was to laugh and say, why the hell should I do that? They can't prove anything. They don't have any evidence.
He didn't say to you, I didn't do this.
Exactly.
He didn't say, I'm innocent.
Exactly.
Only three people know what happened that night. Two of them are dead and one of them isn't talking.
For now, both Kelly Sutherland and Wally Medeiros must accept that this case may never be resolved.
The toughest thing for me in all of this is the fact that Dick Dow's still walking around, talking and breathing and eating and sleeping and watching TV and so on and so forth. And two people I love very much aren't.
Dick Dow died in 2012. Rudy Persaud practices dentistry in Florida.